My mom was a music major in college, and she comes from a magical place far, far north of here called Buffalo, New York. And she's actually from a small town outside of Buffalo where if young ladies go to college, they tend to major in things like taxidermy and lumberjacking or lumberjackery maybe. But anyway, my mom goes to college. She majors in music. She goes to a small liberal arts college in upstate New York. And so her decision to major in music, to me, has always been simultaneously a brave one, because she comes from a village where ladies major in taxidermy, but also a non-decision at all, because mom, she hears music wherever she goes, she loves music, and she has the voice of an angel. So she goes to college, she learns how to play every single instrument, every single horn, every single violin. She joins every single a cappella group, every single chorus, every single glee club, and she loves it. So she graduates, and then about 14 minutes after graduation, she marries my dad, and her and dad settle on the dairy farm where my dad was raised. And they join a church. The church is called St. Cecilia's. And it's a uncharacteristically grand church. And I say uncharacteristically because it was built by German farmers who tend to have a propensity for prudence and frugality, and opulence just isn't their thing. But the church is grand, it's wonderful, but it doesn't have a choir. So mom starts a choir. And she invites anybody with a pulse to join the choir. And people do. And mom, in characteristic fashion, is able to find the voice in everyone. And if you've ever hummed a note, you could join the choir, and mom would find a place for you. And over the years, the choir really became something pretty magnificent. They looked like something out of Hee Haw with the bib overalls and the straw hats and so forth, but mom made them sound magnificent. The pinnacle in any choir director's year is always Christmas Eve, and St. Cecilia's had a big midnight mass on Christmas Eve, and midnight mass is, it's the Oscars of Catholicism. Everyone who's anyone is there. People are jubilant. It's a celebration. People put on their best bib overalls and their finest straw hats. And mom and the choir bring their A game. They've been practicing for weeks. By this point, they have instruments. Mom's taught people how to play the guitar. She had French horns, she had flutes, I think there was a harmonica, and there was also tambourines, and again, it just sounded magnificent. So Christmas Eve, mom would leave for midnight mass around 9, the choir would sing Christmas carols until midnight, then they would have mass, and then after mass, the choir would have a little party, have Christmas cookies, wine, and so forth. The choir members always pooled their money together and bought mom a music box. And, you know, in addition, they exchanged gifts, you know, Christmas cookies shaped like music notes, and then, you know, the things that farmers exchange with each other, turnips, pickled cow testicles, the whole thing. And so mom would get home around 3 a.m. on Christmas morning. And while she was starting and shepherding and nurturing this choir, she was also having babies. So in the first 4 years they were married, mom and dad had my older brother, me, and my younger sister. And typically on Christmas morning, we would wake up around 4 or 5, and we could look in our stockings. We couldn't open gifts. And we would wait for dad to finish milking the cows and come in. He would come in around 9, and then he would wake up mom, and then we'd open presents. One Christmas, we wake up around 4, you know, we look in our stockings, do the whole thing, and then on top of the dining room table is a pile of mom's loot that she just dumped there, you know, the pickled cow testicles, the turnips, the music notes, the cookie shaped like music notes. And then so we're going through all this stuff, and my brother and I find an envelope, and in perfect clergyman cursive, it says, "Kathy," that's my mom's name, "thank you for sharing your gifts with us." So we open the envelope, and inside are 10 $100 bills. Now, I'm not an economist, but I'm rather certain that $1,000 in 1970s money is the equivalent of at least $42 million today. And we had lots of food. We had food growing up. We had shelter. We had clothes. When necessary, we had, you know, minor orthodontia. My parents provided for us, but I never knew how that happened. If there was any anxiety about money, I never felt it. But I know, like, being a farmer, you're always on the cusp of ruin. One super wet spring, or one super dry summer, or one epidemic of bovine typhus, one swarm of locusts, and you're done. Now, that's just a long-winded way of saying my brother and I had never seen 10 $100 bills before. So we look at each other the same way like Cagney looks at Lacey when they know some mystery's afoot, and we're like, "What the fuck is this?" And we're like, "Oh my gosh, you know, mom's a drug mule." And then secretly I'm like, "Mom sold her kidneys to buy us some kick-ass gifts. Yes." So we take out the money, we smell the money, we fling the money on each other. We had forced heat registers, so we toss the money on the furnace, and we watch it like fly up and like cascade down us. Dad comes in from the barn, and we put the money back in the envelope, and it's covered in eggnog and figgy pudding and mucus. And, you know, he wakes up mom, and we're like, "Mom, what the fuck is this?" We were about 6, 7, 8 at the time. And she's like, "Oh, Father, you know, because I don't get paid during the year, Father gives me a Christmas bonus." All right. 364 days later, we're prepared for the loot. So mom leaves for midnight mass. We're like, "Mom, put the loot on the dining room table." And I think we can all agree that the greatest show in the history of television is The Price is Right. My brother and sister, Price is Right, a paternal and omniscient and under a 2017 lens, kind of creepy, Bob Barker, invited Americans to come up on stage and guess how much his shit cost, and if they got it right, they would, you know, leave with money or Bob Barker's shit. And my brother and sister and I just loved it. We, you know, how does Bob Barker know how much a family eats of Rice-A-Roni a year? Like, and then if you drive to California and you win a car, how do you get both cars home? So knowing that we were, you know, that some loot was nigh, we take one of my dad's jackets, after mom leaves for midnight mass, a jacket not unlike this one, and, you know, we put it on the chair in the dining room, and we wake up Christmas morning, "Happy birthday, Jesus," stockings. And my brother puts on the coat. We find mom's money. He puts all the money in the pocket. And then he grabs a spatula. And we walk through the kitchen And my brother makes us guess how much everything in the kitchen cost. And the blender, a can of Taster's Choice, instant coffee, a set of knives, the dishwasher. And his prices were just arbitrary, but when we got it right, we could reach in his pocket and pull out a fresh $100 bill. And then we all got a chance to put on the jacket and make people guess how much the shit cost. And then Dad came in from the barn, and we put the money back, and it was covered in figgy pudding and mucus, and then we would resume our Christmas. And then over the years, these games got more sophisticated. We set up a rudimentary Plinko game. We set up that cliffhanger game where, you know, the guy would walk up, you know, climb the mountain in that satanic yodel. And we would just, you know, make each other guess how much the vacuum cleaner costs, how much the Tupperware costs, the grandfather clock. And one year, we were playing this really fucked up version of Beat the Clock, and I told my sister, Chris, I'll give you $800 if you run around the house in less than 2 minutes. And she said, but there's snow outside. And I'm like, do you want the $800 or not? So she did, and she gets the $800. And then just as abruptly as this all started, it ended. And, you know, we didn't have a conference. We never said, you know, we're getting kind of old for this, or this is pretty nuts. It just, you know, like a lot of things do, you know, the last time you carry your son up the stairs when he's sleeping, and the last conversation you have with a grandparent, and you don't know it's the last one. It just ended. And now I realize that it was kind of that I really look forward to, you know, the 4 or 5 hours where we were just us. And, you know, these 10 $100 bills, they were ours, you know, and this tradition, amidst all the other traditions, were ours. As a parent, that's really comforting. My wife and I have 3 kids, and it's great. Just, you know what, they're not going to remember what we want them to remember anyway. Let's just let go a little bit. Because Christmas is hard, you know, with the trains and the lights and the Santa and the whole thing. But as a son, it makes me really kind of sad when I think about the way my mom, you know, went to great lengths to try to get us to play the harp, or, you know, try to get us to sing, or try to get us to love baby Jesus. And just, it never took. And I do love baby Jesus, but we just loved Benjamin Franklin a little bit more. So Catholics are good with guilt. So I was just so I talked to Mom today. In 12 days, Mom will be playing at her 50th midnight mass, or 49th midnight mass. She's in her 50th year. My sister was born December 21st, so she had to take that year off. But she's also joined the Buffalo Philharmonic Chorus, and they had a concert on Saturday, and Mom, that Buffalo had 3 feet of snow. And I said, Mom, you didn't go to the concert, did you? She's like, of course I did. And I said, well, how did you get there? She's like, oh, Dad drove me. And I said, Mom, you guys can't be driving to 3 feet of snow. And she said, Gary, I wouldn't have missed it. Thank you.